still Sunday.
It is still Sunday.
Okay, so we're here again. Third time's the charm?
Third time's the charm, yep.
Nice. We have no housekeeping this week.
No housekeeping, therefore no housekeeping music.
No housekeeping music. Just tell your friends to Insta us, whatever.
Insta follow or...
Mm-hmm. Hashtag these guys.
Yeah, well, these guys. Mm-hmm. Jerks.
Yep. Get them on board. It's been a long morning already, you can tell.
All the cool kids are doing it.
All right, we got a sciencey time to spend this morning, I think.
Yeah, I gave Greg a hard time. It's like, we're talking too much business stuff and beer market stuff. Let's get back to hop stuff. So let's talk hop stuff. First off, I would like to say, I'm not sure if I can congratulate somebody for getting rain, but I'm very, very happy for our friends in New South Wales, Australia, for finally getting some rain and ending their 18-month drought and their wildfires. Granted, they're still burning, but that is terrific news, and we're all thinking of you. And if there's anything that the Hopnology family can do, and you're in that situation, please reach out to us. We'll see what we can do to help.
Absolutely.
Yep. So that's good news. But the topic today, topic du jour, is going to be all about weeds. I'm getting like the best content from following social media outlets and people asking good questions. So this is no different. I've got a lot of there's a lot of back and forth this week on a couple of topics, but the one I want to focus on today is weed control. And what we do and how we do it and why we do it.
And weed and control are both words that I understand and other people will understand. So I'm at the ready for some weirdness here with a strange terminology for you to come up with. So let us have it.
You're going to get it. So we're going to be talking about pre-emergent herbicides today and their modes of action and how they work. And hopefully that will inform some folks who want to use them. Of course, we can hear it now, but I'm organic. What am I going to do? Well, it comes down to cultural practices at that point. And we've talked about this a bit in the past, but we've never talked about the why of these different practices. So why don't we do that? Let's just jump into it. A little bit of definition first when we talk about a pre-emergent herbicide. It's a herbicide that a grower applies to the soil, and it resides on the soil particle. And as a seed germinates and starts to push its way through the soil, it picks up this herbicide, and that's how it gets into the plant and does its thing, as opposed to a post-emergent herbicide, which is something that you spray on something that's already growing above the ground, is green, and yada yada. We know how that works. So pre-emergents go on the soil before the seeds sprout, or certainly while the seeds have sprouted but yet to emerge from the soil. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Pre-emergent. It's right there in the word.
Pre-emergent. Correct. A lot of people, conventional growers, are not making use of pre-emergent herbicides because I think they don't maybe understand them, or I don't know, but it can be an absolute life changer in the hop yard.
I would imagine... You know, we get so many questions about, I'm seeing this on my plants. Well, it's because you didn't put on X. When there's nothing to see, there's no indication that anything's missing or you've done anything wrong. So I can understand why pre-emergent perhaps isn't the first place you go, because it's when things start to emerge and you see issues with your plants that all of a sudden you want to remedy it. Why spend the money before there's a problem that's visible?
That's a good insight. I would agree with that. For the first year or maybe two, but if anybody's growing hops beyond that, you know what weeds do to your hop yard. And if you're if you're a quarter of an acre, you got a couple of hundred plants, you may say, well, why do I need a pre-emergent? I can just do this by hand. Yep, you're right, you can. But if you're an acre or more, honestly, you really can't unless you have tons of free labor, because you will do nothing but pull weeds. That's it. So let's talk about why this is important, how to use these things, and what to do, what your options are if you don't have them at the ready, or if you're organic. Okay, so pre-emergent, as the name applies, goes on the soil before the weeds emerge. That typically means that certainly in temperate zones where you have a cold dormant period where nothing's growing, that it's going on in your springtime. And it's important to note that these should go down before the hops wake up, before the shoots wake up, because they can have an impact on growing hop shoots if they've broken dormancy. So we're looking at, for instance, here in the Midwest of the U.S., that would be probably sometime around April, where the soil's warmed up just enough, you know, most of the threat of snow has passed, and the soil is warmed up just enough that we're starting to get some activity from regreening of like perennial weeds like dandelions and things like that. So we would go down, these are sprays, liquid, so we're banding them. We're applying a band of liquid over the mound. Think of it like putting on a shield of herbicide so that these weeds, when they germinate and try to grow, they stop and die.
So you're not watering at this point. This is not something you're putting into your irrigation plan.
Absolutely not. This is not fertigated. This goes down as a spray. That would mean for some folks who are not using liquid fertilizer applications that they may need to modify their spray rig, their spray equipment, in order to get a band of herbicide down. This is not like fertilizer in that it sticks to the soil, so it doesn't leach, it doesn't go down into the water column. If you miss a spot with the spray, it's sort of like spray painting, right? You're gonna have a thin spot, you're gonna see what's underneath of it. Well, the weeds in that area are gonna come up, so coverage is really important. As opposed to like an air blast sprayer, right? You're not putting pre-emergent herbicide down with an air blast sprayer. You're going to typically use some sort of a boom sprayer. And for small growers, that could be something that's attached to a four-wheel, you know, ATV vehicle or a tow-behind rig or something like that that has an arm that sticks out the side, a small tank, a small pump, and a nozzle that creates a fan effect so that you can basically, it's like a giant spray paint rig. There are spray nozzles that are made. They're called offset fans, where they're not a typical fan nozzle. If you got a nozzle, you're looking at it like with light behind you and you put liquid through it, it's going to create a symmetrical V-shaped fan. An offset fan is not going to be symmetrical. It's going to have one side of the V is going to be very short and the other side is going to be really, really long. So it sort of provides reach across further out in one direction from the nozzle. Does that make sense?
It does. And I do have to say that I'm finding that some of the best toys are these toys that provide what either irrigation or herbicides. There's some fun stuff out there.
Oh yeah. And there's, we talked about application technology a little bit, a few podcasts ago. We could get into nozzle types and all what they do. It's really interesting. The offset fan nozzle really worked a treat for me. Certainly if you're trying to apply after your strings are up, nothing pisses you off more to look back and see that your boom has snagged your strings and pulled out about 200 of them. So having that offset nozzle really helps because you can stay a little bit further back away from your strings and get that pre-emergent down. Keep that in mind. And also, liquid volume is really important. You know, you could have X amount of chemical being applied over Y area, but really how much liquid is there to carry that material into the soil? So I would always go a bit on the heavier side of the liquid. So my concentration in the tank would be more diluted, but since I'm putting the same amount out over the same area, the overall area concentration is the same. It's just I have more carrier to get that stuff into the soil and get a good coat down. So I would tend to go on the heavier volume side than saying, oh wow, I only need to put out, you know, 10 pounds per acre of this stuff, so, or whatever it happens to be. It's not that much. I'm going to put it in 40 gallons of water and away I go. Well, you're going to find that the activity may not be as good if you go with a concentrated liquid as opposed to a a diluted one and get really good application on. The thing that always drives me nuts, Greg, I don't know about you, like, do you have people around your neighborhood that absolutely positively cannot have a dandelion in their yard?
I don't know that I do. I've never noticed it.
Yeah, man, I've got a neighbor. And, you know, I live out in the country, for God's sakes, and there's, he calls them weeds, I call them natives, all over the place. And this guy mows his yard twice a week. He's got a big John Deere riding lawnmower, and he's got maybe 1,000 square feet of grass. I don't know.
Oh,
yeah, a couple thousand square feet, maybe. But nary is there a dandelion in his yard. He's got, you know, the True Green Chem Lawn people come out and take care of it. And literally adjacent to his yard is my restored prairie. So there's seeds blowing in all the time, and just he's out there grubbing out every little thing, right? I'm like, really, dude? It's not how I choose to spend my time, but that's how he chooses to spend his.
Mm-hmm. Why not just turn it into green concrete at that point?
Very good. Artificial turf. Mm-hmm. It's come such a long way from the Brady's Bunch backyard. So, I mean, believe me, the only thing that drives me more nuts than mowing the lawn is moving snow. So, you know, they're both right up there as like pointless activities. I would be very, very happy to not have to mow my grass. But the point of that digression was you have to keep in mind what is realistic when you're trying to use a pre-emergent to control weeds. Mm-hmm. Every one of these pre-emergents controls a different spectrum of weeds. I shouldn't say different, but they control some species better than others. I encourage everyone to really get to know their troublesome weed species in their yards, because that's going to inform your decision on what to expect, certainly from a pre-emergent. My big pain in the ass weed is thistles. And thistle seeds, thistles put out gobs and gobs of seeds. Some of them can be perennial. And man, oh man, once they get established, there's no easy way of getting rid of them. It's really a scorched earth policy. I was looking for pre-emergents that had really good thistle control. And what I found was, the best I could do is, get good thistle control, but it'll control everything else really great. So what ended up happening was, after a few years of applications, I ended up with basically a weed monoculture. So that would, you have to adjust your expectations, right? These things are not going to control absolutely everything. Some seeds are more dynamic and resistant than others. What it did do is it allowed me to then focus on those one or two or three weed species that were tolerant of the pre-emergent, and I could use a different chemical approach with those. You know, I could use a much more pricey herbicide, contact herbicide, post-emergent for those thistles, and go into a spot spray instead of doing a large broadcast spray. That sort of 1-2 punch really cut my weed population down.
So, you know, James, you mentioned different types of weeds and getting to know the weeds in your yard, which, of course, if you're first starting out, is difficult. You may not know what you've got there. But why not an all-in-one solution? And, of course, you know, I've got Roundup in my garage. I know you're cringing when I say Roundup. How do you figure out where to go with that?
That is a good question. This is not an all-in-one at all.
No easy button?
No easy button here. You can't just use the easy button here and say, hey, why, you know, these are all chemicals. Why can't I just spray them? They have different modes of action, right? They work different ways in the plant. And this is where we get into your crazy words that I make up.
And as you answer the question, when you say different ways, also, does that mean at different times, or can you just swish? I think I'm answering my own question. Can you just pour it all together at once? Probably no.
Mix it up in a big jug. Uh-huh. No, you can. Well, I mean, you can do whatever you want. You hate it when I say that.
I do.
It that way. You can tank mix certain things, absolutely. But I don't know that you would, in some cases, you would tank mix a pre-emergent and a post-emergent herbicide together. You could. My concern would be that if you had weeds that are already emerged that you're trying to spray down with a post-emergent herbicide, your hops are also up at that same time. You're going to dose those suckers too. They're usually not seen mixed together in areas when we're using them where, you know, hops are growing. If that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't expect to see them used at the same time. So modes of action of these things are different with pre-emergent and post-emergent, right? Pre-emergent's acting really on the seed and the ultra, ultra tiny seedling that's there that you won't even see it coming out of the soil, right? Whereas something that's already established, you know, a plant that's up, certainly if it's woody or it turns woody and it's really mature, even something like Roundup, which, you know, has got a bad rap right now, glyphosate, it has a hard time with some of those woody weeds. So they could go, we're talking really the spectrum there. So let's just focus on the seedling end of things and how to get good control there. There's really two modes of action for most pre-emergents that are registered for use in hops. And I understand that our listeners in some other countries may have some different availability, but based on what I understand here in the U.S., from my experience, was two different modes of action. And one of them is to basically stop the cells in these small growing root tips and shoot tips, stop them from dividing. It gets in and monkeys with their cellular chemistry, and they no longer are able to divide. Or if they divide, as you know, you need to divide cells as you're growing, right? As they divide, they sort of do so misshapenly, and they can no longer perform their function. Usually it's some sort of inhibition of the root tip meristem. So the very small root that's poking out of the seed, you know, you see those little pictures in your kid's science book, right? The mung bean sprouting or whatever. So that little thing that shoots out the bottom called the root radical, the tip of that is where all the cell division is going on. And some of these chemicals target that. So as that thing is expanding and growing down into the soil, it's contacting that herbicide and it's screwing up its chemistry.
So, and I imagine that's how it works on the weeds. It's killing the weeds. It sounds identical to chemotherapy. In all candor, it's you're using something to kill off the bad, and if you're not careful, it's also going to kill off the good.
Yep. So you can overapply. You can, that same compound could have if it got so deeply into the soil that it was contacting your hop roots, it would do the same thing. As the new root hairs are forming on your hops, the feeder roots, it could potentially cause mutation of those root radical meristem cells. But those feeder roots, the most shallow feeder roots that you've got on hops are 5-6 inches deep. And this herbicide that you sprayed maybe penetrates the soil up to a quarter of an inch. Ah. Very shallow.
And there's no impact to the depth at which it will go due to your earlier comment about going maybe for more volume, not more concentrate, but more volume?
Yeah, only in that it would potentially soak in a little bit further. So most seeds, if they're more than a half an inch deep, they're not going to germinate anyway. They don't get any cues from the light or from, you know, really wide swings in soil temperature from sunlight. So they're not going to germinate. That's why mulching works. You bury the seeds and the seeds stay dormant in the seed bank. So we're really talking about only treating the top half an inch of soil at most.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I wouldn't flood it on there, but I would certainly want to get a good application so the soil looked damp after I passed. That will go a long way to keeping these seeds from sprouting. It's not a one and done application. I mean, some of these things will. Let me back up. So we talked about one mode of action, which is the root, basically the root tip inhibition. Another primary mode of action for another group of chemicals is basically chlorophyll bleaching. There's a couple of herbicides out there. Chateau is a brand name that I use quite successfully. And it is an enzyme inhibitor. So it's a I'll just use the short name. PPO is the enzyme. And that controls, PPO controls the synthesis of chlorophyll in the leaves. So if you can't form chlorophyll, you're not making food for yourself as a plant. And if you're not making food for yourself, you're going to die. You're going to starve to death. And so that's what these other pre-emergents do, is they inhibit these young seedlings from forming chlorophyll. So they may actually emerge, but they're going to look white. And oftentimes I'll see this too, where people will put down this type of herbicide, pre-emergent. They'll say, wait a second, what's going on? My hop shoots are all white now. Well, apparently they were just breaking dormancy and you sprayed over them, and now you've got some bleaching. Hops will usually grow out of that though, because they have such a massive amount of energy reserves. So I don't freak out about it too much. And I know some folks have even used this type of compound, these PPO inhibitors, as a burn down chemical in the early spring. I know some folks out west in the Pacific Northwest use that to basically kill off all their first growth. So it can work really well for that. Just make sure you're being cautious when you're putting it down, if your intention is to not burn off your hops with these compounds.
So yeah, burning off the hops, bad. Got it. Check.
Check.
I find that visual I've got in my head now of the weeds being so shallow and the hops properly planted being so much deeper. It's helping to keep my mindset on the science and how you're targeting what to kill.
That's part of being a good farm manager, is knowing what tools you have in your toolbox to address a certain issue. It's like the difference between, in the construction industry, of someone who's a rough framing carpenter who's just, you know, building walls, and someone who's a master cabinet maker. You have different levels of expertise, and you gain those, you know, just, well, by doing and experiencing. That's the education, that's the wisdom part, is knowing which one of these tools to use when and what to expect out of them.
Sure.
If you've got an apprentice woodworker who doesn't know anything about, you know, your fancy chisels and planes and how to use some of these tools, but, you know, the apprentice knows how to use a hammer and a saw. Well, that's a good start. But there are many, many more tools, and just in the tools that the apprentice knows how to use, a hammer and a saw, there's a dozen different kind of hammers and two dozen different kinds of saws. So you've really do have to learn through experience and educating yourself. It's not just as simple as saying, okay, well, here's this chemical, I'll put it down, and lo and behold, well, it didn't do anything. I hear this all the time, it didn't do anything. When it comes to spraying for pre-emergent for grasses, or burn down herbicide for grasses. James, you said to use this stuff, it was really expensive and it didn't work. Did you read the label?
I'm going to throw two comments in there. One is my favorite of all, which is, sounds like user error.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is that with something like this, it didn't do anything. Do you really know it wouldn't have been a hell of a lot worse if you hadn't put it down?
Yeah, that is a very good point. I hear that too. People put down their pre-emergent herbicide and they're like, but I still got weeds. Well, that goes back to what I was talking about earlier. But, well, what is your expectation? Mm-hmm. What would it have looked like if you didn't put it down? And you have to think too, what is the population of weed seeds that you have? Because if you didn't do anything for 3 years and you had weeds over your head and they're all woody and they're sending out bajillions of seeds, guess what? You're going to have a considerable population of seeds poke through that. And it's going to take round after round of application, and not necessarily in the same year, but this could take years in order to get that weed seed bank in the soil depleted.
And if you live next to a moron who keeps his field big and messy and has seeds flowing over into your field when you're trying to get rid of your dandelions, that's a problem.
Exactly. It absolutely is a problem. And so you have to be diligent about this. I would rather see, you know, pre-emergent is not going to take away the need for hand weeding or for spot spraying. That's not what its intention is. Then it's meant to give you a fighting chance to manage those weeds that do make it through, to be able to handle them on sort of a one-off basis and improve your quality of life. Proper pre-emergent application will reduce your need to weed by 90%.
Okay, your need to weed just became the episode title.
Yeah, yep. I figured that was coming. So not to be trifled with, it is massively important to the overall success of your hop yard, not just for your own sanity and your cost and labor to keep it clean, but also any weeds that are growing there, any other plant besides your hops that you have growing is a challenger for nutrients to the hop. So keep that in mind. I'm not saying you need to have a scorched earth, or as we call them, moonscaped hop yard, but understand that any other plants that you have growing in there are competing for nutrients. They're competing for everything, and they could potentially be disease harborers if you don't have the right companion plants planted. We got that going for us, you know, which is nice. And,
I mean, companion plants, are we going to get into that as well, or is that a whole nother topic?
That's a whole nother topic. We can talk about cover cropping and companion plants and things like that a bit later. But just suffice it to know right now that if we are going to reduce the number of, you know, weeds in our hop yard, and you're a conventional grower, that pre-emergence are an absolute necessity to have in your toolbox. They can last for 90 days in some cases, one application, 60 days. So a pretty dramatic impact. One application that does work for you for 60 days, holy crap, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And then maybe later you go on with another pre-emergent with a different mode of action if you have to. Or maybe by that time you're into spraying a burn-down herbicide to burn off all the lower leaves and any other plants that are growing there. So you could cover the entire season with just a couple of applications. That's amazing.
I'm trying to wrap my head around just how much time is spent doing this, and how, I guess, how well that time is spent is so much more. If you don't do this and you're hand weeding and dealing with it in the midst of the season, it is so much worse than the time you can spend up front getting it done correctly with a pre-emergent.
Yeah, I can give you absolute numbers. So when we had our first large 10-acre plot in the expansion farm, this was an old cornfield and bean field, and it had been left to go to seed, so seed bank was pretty robust. And you have to be careful when you're planting hops, you know, in a new field and using pre-emergent, because you can have some stunting effects. So we should talk about that a bit. We did a pretty good job. We planted into plastic, so plastic mulch. And it worked, I'd say 70%. I think it was worth the time to have done it, but it gave us a population of weeds that basically were strong enough to push right through the plastic, and those were the thistles. So the following year, we didn't use a pre-emergent. We did later, but we didn't get to it when we should have. And everything sprouted. And we spent, I had three full-time people from training through to harvest. All they did was weed.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just brutal, to the point where we got up to burn down and we just went through and scorched earth that we had to. We had the three people on 10 acres could not keep up with getting rid of weeds. Couldn't do it.
Wow.
That next year, when we did get our pre-emergence down correctly, I didn't need them. So I got rid of three full-time, 40 hours a week people from May, early May until end of August. So you do that math. Say
that is huge.
So I was paying them $12 an hour. So yeah, well, let's see here. Let's just do it for all the listeners at home. So we had $12 an hour times three, so $36 an hour times 40, $1,440 times, see, 1, 2, May, June, July, August, times 16 weeks, $23,000.
Wow.
In labor. And one application of a high-end pre-emergent, which cost me, in terms of labor and tractor time, $1,380.
You don't get a better return on investment anywhere.
Right? So It's that simple. Now, for our organic growers and non-conventional growers, this is a different issue altogether. They have a different set of challenges. Primarily, well, they can't use these pre-emergents. There's really no registered organic pre-emergent out there. So their weeds need to be dealt with in another way. And typically that's smothering. I don't care if it's a mulch or if you're hilling up and cutting down, as we call it, but one way or the other or another, you're constantly tilling, so mechanically tilling to kill the weeds. You're basically scraping the soil and bringing those young plants. You're cutting them off under the ground with a tiller, and they die. So that's something you have to continuously go back and do, right? That's tractor time, that's labor time, that's not great for your soil, because every time you go over and you chew up the soil, you break the soil structure into finer and finer particles. So now we have to go back and add a lot more soil conditioning agents, like we call it green manure. So like that could be cover crop that you're planting, like rye or oats, and tilling under. That could be other clover that you're tilling under, things of that nature. But constant tilling is what's required to keep the weeds down. And then you have this idea of what we call hilling up. And you see this a lot in Europe, where the way they deal with weeds, aside from plowing in the middle of their rows, the interrow, they have a disc that they drag behind their tractor that basically takes soil from the middle of the interrow and throws it up onto the top of their crowns, smothering the weeds. And just like I said, well, if the seeds are buried, they're going to die. Same thing with the weeds. If they've emerged and they're small enough and you bury them, game over. But every time you do that, you stir up the soil and you stir up the potential to have more weed seeds wake up because you bring them up to the soil surface. This technique can work quite well if you do this year over year over year over year, where you're depleting the seed bank in the soil and you're not really depositing new seeds into the bank. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I'm curious what the effectiveness is of that versus the chemical approach.
So it can be quite effective. The issue is, the big issue is now what you're doing. Are you irrigating? Because if you're irrigating, where's your irrigation line? Because if it's laying on the ground, you're going to bury it. And unless it's a sub drip system, it's going to be a problem. So in Europe, most of them don't irrigate, so they don't have to worry about that. Also, you end up burying your crowns, and you bury those lower shoots. Those low shoots that get buried, they can turn into roots and make feeder roots, which helps with taking up nutrients. But as you do this a few times a year, you can imagine how that mound gets taller and taller and taller, because you keep piling more soil up onto this thing, right? Mm-hmm. So the effect of that is that the crown can get, if you didn't remove that soil later, the crown would get so deep in the ground after years of hilling up that it would rot and die. So at the beginning of the next season, these growers have to come through with a machine. They call it crowning or carping, which is basically a huge circular saw blade turned on its side. And they drive over the mound that they, this big giant mound of soil that they used hilling up the entire year before, they drive over it. They have the saw blade cut off that mound, and they literally cut into the crown that's under the ground, and behind this machine that's sort of reforming this 6 to 8 inch tall bed. And so that's what we call crowning. So you spend all year piling the soil up to control weeds, to go back through the following year in the spring and cut it all back down and reshape the bed.
Oh boy.
That does a couple of things. So that crowning does a couple of things. It reshapes the bed. It also can get rid of your early season growth. Now, in the States, we don't do that in a commercial scenario. We are more focused on pre-emergent and post-emergent herbicides and less about hilling to control weeds. Therefore, we don't have the need to go in and cut the crown back in the spring. A lot of new growers see this being done, and they think this is something they have to do because that's part of hop horticulture. It is not. It is a 1-2 punch mechanism for weed control that does not involve chemical applications. Does that make sense?
It does.
Can I make that any more clear?
I don't know that you can. Say it louder, maybe.
Yeah, right. There's growers out there that have been, you know, doing this method for, you know, a couple of generations, and they'll say this is the only way you can grow hops. You're wrong. It is not. We have thousands and thousands of acres in North America that say otherwise. So, but for organic growers, there probably isn't a better method than that. Mulching can, people say, well, what about mulch? Won't that accomplish the same thing? It can, but how much mulch are you going to keep putting on there? And what is the mulch made of? Because certain mulches can rob nutrients from the soil, yada, yada, yada. So you're still going to have to go through your inter-row and do something to control weeds. So at that point, you probably would be better off to think about using this hilling up and crowning down method. It's going to require more equipment. It's very specialized equipment to do the crowning. So that's a drawback as well, but it's also a cost of doing business.
Right, right. If you're going to go organic, you know this is far from the only limitation that you have. We've got to find an alternative solution. So that is a way to do it.
So those are the two big, you know, aspects of pre-emergent weed control. You know, what can you do for conventional production using herbicides, and what is available for non-conventional growers? And I don't care what you do. You know, knock yourself out, whatever works best for you, but do something. Don't let these things just go, because weeds will get ahead of you in a snap. And once they're ahead of you, you're done. It's so hard to gain that ground back. And then certainly once they go to seed, that's really game over. Now you've spent all this time, invested all this money and labor that just to do weeding. And if you can't get the weeds out before they go to seed, then you lost. Get on it early, stay on it often, and your hops will be all the better for it.
And there's nothing worse than that 20/20 hindsight of wishing you had done something and now having to deal with the outcome. This is something very, very preventable.
I'm expecting there's a lot of our listeners out there nodding their heads right now, saying, "Oh yeah."
We love to hear those horror stories. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the first year you didn't do this, and maybe the first year you did do it, and what the relative impact was. We'd love to hear it.
And I would say, if anybody has any questions about pre-emergence or any chemicals whatsoever, even fertilizers, post them on our Facebook page. Send us a buzz on Instagram. Do whatever you want to do. Send a question through our webpage. We will respond.
Yep. Skywriting. Love skywriting.
Skywriting's good. Yep. Mm-hmm. Got to be careful with the passenger pigeons, though. They're... there's a lot of birds of prey out here, so let's maybe not go that route. It gets in and monkeys with their cellular chemistry.